In a world still reeling from the horrors of World War II, Eva Gerst steps onto American soil with a secret mission. Unlike the hopeful refugees surrounding her, she hasn't come seeking a new life, she's come seeking justice. With her traumatized companion Bridget by her side and crucial documents sewn into their skirt linings, Eva carries the weight of 27 names, victims whose memory fuels her dangerous quest. Sharon Cameron's Bluebird has captivated readers with its intricate exploration of identity, trauma, and redemption, earning it a place on numerous bestseller lists and becoming a book club favorite for its unflinching look at post-war moral complexities. As Reese Witherspoon noted when featuring it in her book club, this novel forces us to confront uncomfortable truths while reminding us that even in darkness, our choices define us. Eva's story unfolds through alternating timelines that gradually reveal her shocking true identity. In 1946 New York, she navigates a precarious existence at Powell House, a refugee center run by Quakers, while searching for her Nazi father. Meanwhile, flashbacks to 1945 Germany introduce us to Inga von Emmerich, a privileged teenager in the League of German Girls whose perfect Nazi world collapses when Hitler dies and Soviet forces invade. The brilliance of Cameron's narrative structure lies in how these seemingly separate stories converge into a single, devastating truth. Eva and Inga are the same person, yet neither identity fully captures who she truly is. Born Anna Pteszynska to Polish communist parents, she was stolen as a child by Dr. Otto von Emmerich, a Nazi physician who Germanized her through psychological conditioning and raised her as his daughter Inga. My name is Inga von Emmerich. I belong to Papa, Mama, Germany, and the Führer. They love me, and I love them. Young Inga recites to herself, revealing how thoroughly her identity was manufactured through Nazi indoctrination. Yet even as a child, something within her resisted complete control. A memory of releasing a bird her father ordered her to kill becomes the symbolic core of her fractured identity. When Inga discovers her father's concentration camp experiments and witnesses Soviet atrocities during Germany's collapse, she adopts the identity of Eva Gerst from a dead girl's papers. This third identity becomes her shield as she struggles to protect Anna Marie, her traumatized friend who becomes Bridget in America. Through Eva's journey, Cameron explores how identity can be weaponized, fractured, and ultimately reclaimed through conscious moral choices rather than indoctrination. At the dark heart of Bluebird lies the disturbing historical reality of Operation Paperclip and Project Bluebird, American intelligence programs that recruited Nazi scientists after World War II to continue their research into mind control. The novel meticulously documents how these programs operated under the guise of national security, with American officials willingly overlooking war crimes in their pursuit of psychological warfare capabilities. Dr. von Emmerich emerges as the embodiment of this moral compromise, a brilliant but ruthless scientist whose concentration camp experiments represent the ultimate perversion of medical ethics. If authority is not obeyed, there is no order, the doctor tells young Ing, revealing the fundamental philosophy behind fascist control. This mantra echoes throughout the novel, showing how authoritarian systems rely on absolute compliance. His experiments aim to create the perfect subject, one who kills on command and forgets afterward, through a combination of drug therapy, electroshock treatments, and psychological conditioning. The novel details these procedures with haunting precision, drawing from historical records of actual Nazi medical experiments. The mysterious Anna Pteszynska file serves as the novel's central mystery, documented through recovered medical records, witness testimonies, and fragmented memories. American agent Cruikshanks pursues this supposedly successful experiment with ruthless determination, while Eva's gradual realization of her true identity unfolds through nightmarish flashbacks and recovered memories. The revelation that she is Anna, the killer her father created through years of systematic abuse and conditioning, becomes both a personal tragedy and a broader indictment of scientific amorality. Cameron meticulously details the mechanisms of control employed by both Nazi Germany and post-war intelligence agencies. The doctor's methods evolve from crude physical punishment to sophisticated psychological conditioning, including isolation, sleep deprivation, and carefully calculated rewards. Similarly, Cruikshank's represents the Cold War mentality that justified any means necessary, using Eva's precarious immigrant status as leverage while manipulating her with false promises about finding her father. The doctor's philosophical justifications prove particularly chilling. He praises Hitler as a man of vision who removed barriers to scientific discovery, suggesting they could create a better world by studying and improving lesser blood through experimentation. This rationalization reveals how easily scientific pursuit becomes corrupted when divorced from moral constraints. Through parallel storylines in Nazi Germany and post-war America, the novel explores how institutions can normalize atrocity through bureaucratic language and appeals to greater good. The novel forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions about the ethics of using knowledge gained through atrocity. When Eva discovers that contemporary medical treatments derive from concentration camp research, she faces an impossible moral calculus, one that resonates with real historical debates about the ethics of using Nazi medical data. Through this lens, Bluebird examines how societies rationalize complicity and questions whether ends can ever truly justify means. Powell House emerges as both a physical setting and a moral counterpoint to the doctor's laboratory, representing a stark contrast between humanity's capacity for cruelty and compassion. Based on a real historical refuge operated by the American Friends Service Committee, AFSC, in Philadelphia, it embodies the Quaker philosophy of human dignity and unconditional acceptance. Here, Eva encounters people like Martha Balderston, whose gentle authority stems from genuine concern rather than power, Elizabeth Betts Whittlesby, who teaches English with patience and understanding, and Mrs. Angel, volunteers who extend kindness without demanding ideological conformity or performative gratitude. The daily routines at Powell House reflect its healing mission: communal meals where refugees share their stories, English classes that double as cultural bridges, and quiet moments in the garden where residents can process their trauma. Yet, within this nurturing environment, Eva maintains her fierce independence and determination for vengeance. She mentally recites 27 names, her personal litany of those lost, and secretly steals a bread knife, transforming a humble kitchen tool into a potential weapon. This duality creates the novel's central moral tension. Can someone who has known only hatred and survival learn to trust in human goodness? Can the pursuit of justice coexist with personal healing? America's post-war response to refugees reveals deep contradictions that the novel refuses to ignore. Eva's arrival captures this complexity. While Powell House staff welcome her with open arms, she faces immediate hostility outside its walls. A soldier's act of spitting on her shoe and snarling "Kraut" symbolizes the broader anti-German sentiment. The segregated bus station, where Eva observes whites on one side, brown faces on the other, forces her to confront America's own systemic prejudices, a society preaching democracy while maintaining racial hierarchies. Perhaps most disturbing is the government's pragmatic approach to denazification, protecting valuable Nazi scientists like Dr. Kurt Blom through Operation Paperclip. Blom's acquittal at Nuremberg, despite evidence of conducting human experiments, highlights how justice often bowed to Cold War priorities. This historical reality adds weight to Eva's personal quest for revenge, suggesting that institutional justice might fail the war's victims. Within this morally compromised landscape, Powell House stands as a rare example of multicultural acceptance and healing. The farewell concert, where Eva performs piano, becomes a powerful symbol of transformation. Jewish refugees playing alongside displaced Germans, former enemies finding harmony through music. The community doesn't demand she forget her past or forgive her tormentors, but rather offers her space to discover who she might become, beyond the identities forced upon her by war and trauma. Through small acts of kindness and daily routines of normal life, Powell House demonstrates how healing might begin, even as the larger world struggles with the aftermath of unprecedented atrocity. Jake Katz enters Eva's life as an enigma, a young Jewish American who seems unusually interested in her from their first meeting. His ability to calm Bridget with harmonica music immediately marks him as someone special, though Eva initially resents this intrusion into her carefully constructed world. Their relationship evolves from mutual suspicion to profound connection as they become reluctant partners in Eva's quest for justice. I had never known love, not from anyone. We weren't taught it. I didn't know what it was. Cameron quotes Martin Bormann Jr., Hitler's godson, in her author's note, illuminating the novel's central question: can someone raised without love learn to recognize and accept it? Jake represents this possibility for Eva, someone who sees her clearly despite her attempts to hide. Their relationship develops through small, meaningful moments. Jake teaching Eva to dance the Lindy Hop, Eva beating everyone at ping pong while wearing a paper crown, Jake kissing her fingertip in a tender goodbye. When Eva finally reveals her true identity as Anna Pashinska, Jake's initial fury gives way to understanding. Rather than seeing her as irredeemably tainted by her Nazi upbringing, he recognizes her as a survivor who has repeatedly chosen to fight against her conditioning. "You're a fighter. You're a fighter every time," Jake tells Eva when she fears her father might still control her mind. This affirmation becomes crucial to Eva's self-reclamation. Jake doesn't dismiss her fears or past actions, but helps her see that her choices, not her conditioning, define who she is. Their relationship embodies the novel's central hope, that genuine connection can heal even the deepest wounds of identity. As Eva tracks her father to America, she carries her mother's Nazi-emblazoned gun with a single purpose: to kill the doctor and deliver justice for his victims. This quest frames the novel's central ethical question: what constitutes true justice in the aftermath of incomprehensible atrocity? Eva's recitation of 27 names, victims she personally witnessed at Sachsenhausen, becomes a ritual that grounds her mission. These aren't abstract casualties, but individuals whose suffering she honors through remembrance. When she finally confronts her father, gun in hand, she begins reciting these names. "This is for Mina, Rosa, Alfred, Piotr, David, Matya, Oscar." Each name represents both a life destroyed and Eva's determination that these deaths not be forgotten. Yet, in the climactic moment, Eva makes a surprising choice. She fires at the blast wall behind her father rather than killing him. This decision echoes her childhood act of releasing the bird her father ordered her to kill, representing her final rejection of his control. "I remembered letting the bird go," she tells Jake afterward, explaining that this memory gave her the strength not to become a killer like her father. The novel doesn't present this choice as morally superior to execution. When Russian agents arrive to take the doctor to face Soviet justice, Eva doesn't interfere. She recognizes that systems of justice, however imperfect, must replace personal vengeance if society is to rebuild. Yet the epilogue reveals the bitter truth that many Nazi scientists escaped punishment entirely. Dr. Kurt Blohm was acquitted at Nuremberg through CIA interference, just as Cruikshanks had predicted. This uncomfortable reality forces readers to confront difficult questions about justice versus expediency in post-war America. The novel suggests that true justice isn't found in a single act of retribution, but in the ongoing commitment to remember victims and reject the ideologies that enabled their suffering. Bridget, later revealed to be Anne Marie, serves as both Eva's responsibility and her psychological mirror throughout the novel, embodying the complex choices facing survivors of wartime trauma. Initially presented as a traumatized, nonverbal companion who needs constant protection, Bridget's presence forces Eva into a nurturing role that challenges her own recovery process. Through carefully crafted flashbacks, her true identity gradually emerges. She was Inga's perfect Aryan friend in the League of German Girls, a former true believer in Nazi ideology who suffered brutal rape by Soviet soldiers during Germany's collapse. Their relationship evolves from Eva's protective caretaking to a more nuanced and complex dynamic as both women struggle with their recovery from trauma. When Bridget undergoes delicate brain surgery to relieve pressure from her war injury, Eva invests profound hope in this physical intervention, believing it might catalyze emotional healing as well. Their interactions become increasingly layered with meaning. Every gesture, every moment of recognition or rejection carries the weight of their shared past and diverging futures. The novel reaches a crucial turning point during their final meeting, which reveals a painful truth. While Eva has systematically dismantled her Nazi conditioning through conscious effort and painful self-examination, Anne-Marie desperately clings to it despite everything she suffered. This contrast becomes particularly poignant in their discussions about the past, where Anne-Marie's selective memory reveals her determination to preserve a sanitized version of history. Eva realizes Anne-Marie hasn't changed. Eva has. This recognition marks Eva's final step toward genuine self-acceptance and moral evolution. In a pivotal scene, she offers Anne-Marie both the unvarnished truth about their pasts and a photograph of her real family, tangible evidence of reality, but crucially, doesn't force her to accept either. When Anne-Marie violently smashes the photograph against the wall after Eva's departure, the act symbolizes her wholesale rejection of reality in favor of comforting lies and familiar prejudices. Through this carefully constructed parallel, Cameron explores how trauma can serve as either a catalyst for profound personal growth or a force that entrenches defensive patterns and prejudices. Eva chooses the more difficult path of confronting her past actions, questioning her fundamental beliefs, and painfully rebuilding her identity from the ground up. In stark contrast, Anne-Marie retreats deeper into the familiar prejudices of her Nazi upbringing, eventually planning to marry a German doctor who validates and shares her unchanged views. The novel makes clear that neither path is predetermined. Both represent conscious choices about how to respond to suffering and loss. Their diverging trajectories highlight how personal responsibility and moral courage play crucial roles in post-trauma recovery. Memory functions as both wound and healing throughout Bluebird, serving as the novel's central metaphor for identity and survival. Eva's fragmented recollections, initially appearing as disconnected sensory impressions, gradually coalesce into a coherent narrative that reveals her true identity as Anna Ptashinska. Each recovered memory becomes a stepping stone toward wholeness, violets woven into her sister's dark braids, the precise pressure of piano keys beneath small fingers, the delicate flutter of a bird's heartbeat against her palm, the smell of her mother's potato soup simmering on a Warsaw stove. These seemingly minor details carry profound significance, representing pieces of her stolen self gradually reclaimed from the void. The blank spaces where Anna the killer's memories should be have dissolved because that Anna never existed. This pivotal realization liberates Eva from her father's most insidious lie that she was his successful experiment in creating a controllable killer. By recovering her childhood act of defiance, choosing to release the bird into freedom rather than kill it as commanded, Eva reclaims agency over her own narrative. This memory serves as proof that even as a child, she possessed an innate moral compass that resisted manipulation. Cameron masterfully explores how memory can be manipulated but never fully erased, likening it to a palimpsest where original writing remains visible beneath newer text. The doctor's systematic attempts to eradicate Anna's Polish identity through punishment, conditioning, and chemical intervention ultimately fail because certain core memories remain stubbornly inaccessible to his control. The taste of her grandmother's pierogi, the sound of Polish lullabies, the feel of her mother's embrace, these sensory memories prove resistant to his scientific methods. Similarly, the Nazi regime's broader attempt to erase undesirable populations through both physical elimination and historical revision is countered by Eva's fierce determination to remember the 27 names of those she witnessed suffering in the camps. She commits each name to memory like a sacred text, understanding that remembrance itself becomes an act of resistance. The novel's epilogue reveals that Eva continues speaking about her experiences in Nazi Germany at the Tuesday Luncheon Club, transforming private memory into public testimony. This act represents her deep understanding that memory must be shared and witnessed to prevent history's dark chapters from repeating. When Jake helps Eva locate her aunt Irina in California, he offers her more than just connection to her original family and culture. He provides the opportunity to bridge her fractured past with her present identity. Through their relationship, Eva learns that healing doesn't require erasing her complicated past, but rather integrating it into a more complete and nuanced understanding of herself. The bluebird imagery that gives the novel its title carries multiple meanings. Initially, it represents the code name for the CIA's mind control program that seeks to exploit Eva's father's research. Later, it becomes associated with Eva herself. Cruikshanks calls her Bluebird as her operational designation. Yet, by the novel's end, the bluebird transforms into a symbol of liberation as Eva remembers releasing a bird through a broken window despite her father's orders to kill it. This transformation mirrors Eva's journey from controlled subject to autonomous individual. Throughout the novel, she struggles with the question of who she truly belongs to: her father, the American government, her mission, or herself. Her repeated affirmation, "I belong only to myself," marks crucial moments of self-reclamation. Yet true belonging remains elusive until she connects with Jake and later her aunt Irina. The novel's final image, Eva feeling certainty, like music, like family, like love, that feels a little bit like flying, completes this transformation. The bluebird that once represented control has become a metaphor for freedom. Eva hasn't erased her past identities as Ing or Anna, but has integrated them into a more authentic self capable of both remembering trauma and experiencing joy. Cameron leaves readers with a bittersweet reality. Somewhere, the experiments continue, as historically they did under Project MKUltra until the 1970s. Yet Eva has created her corner of the world where different values prevail. This tension between systemic injustice and personal redemption captures the novel's nuanced approach to post-war recovery, acknowledging both the persistence of evil and the possibility of transformation through conscious choice and genuine connection. Bluebird exemplifies historical fiction's power to illuminate overlooked aspects of familiar historical events. While many novels address the Holocaust and its aftermath, Cameron focuses on the morally ambiguous post-war period when former enemies became strategic assets. By fictionalizing real programs like Operation Paperclip and Project Bluebird, she forces readers to confront uncomfortable truths about how justice was compromised in the name of national security. The novel delves deep into the psychological impact of discovering that one's understanding of history and family might be built on carefully constructed lies. The novel's extensive author's note provides crucial historical context, explaining that approximately 1,600 Nazi scientists were brought to America after the war, many escaping punishment for war crimes. These scientists, including figures like Wernher von Braun, were instrumental in advancing American space and military programs, while their past actions were deliberately overlooked. Cameron notes that while her characters are fictional, the programs they participated in were real. Project Bluebird eventually evolved into the notorious MKUltra experiments that continued into the 1970s, involving unauthorized human experimentation and psychological manipulation. This grounding in historical reality gives the novel's moral questions immediate relevance. When Eva discovers that Dr. Kurt Blom was acquitted at Nuremberg despite overwhelming evidence of his crimes, her devastation mirrors our own discomfort with historical compromise. The novel forces readers to grapple with questions that remain relevant today. How do we balance justice with pragmatism? At what point does national security justify moral compromise? Yet Jake's response, "You made your corner of the world better," offers a template for ethical action in an imperfect world, suggesting that individual moral choices matter even within corrupt systems. Through Eva's journey from Nazi princess to autonomous individual, Cameron suggests that moral reckoning begins with acknowledging complexity rather than embracing comfortable simplifications. Eva's transformation isn't a simple redemption narrative. It's a painful process of questioning everything she once believed. She doesn't become purely good any more than her father was purely evil. Both made choices within systems that either enabled or constrained their moral agency. The novel explores how family loyalty, national identity, and personal ethics intersect and conflict, particularly in times of war and its aftermath. By recognizing this complexity, readers are invited to examine their own moral choices and the systems that shape them, ensuring that history's darkest chapters remain instructive rather than merely distant horrors. Cameron's work demonstrates how historical fiction can serve as both a mirror and a lens, reflecting our present moral challenges while helping us focus more clearly on the past's enduring lessons. The novel suggests that true reconciliation with history requires both acknowledging past wrongs and taking active steps towards justice, even when those steps seem small in the face of overwhelming historical crimes.